Good morning. Happy Sabbath. Let's pray once again. Dear Lord, thank you for being who you are. And help us today, in Jesus' name. Amen. Before we get going today, we're going to talk about your brains today, okay? But before we get going and get too deep into it, I want to put God in the forefront, okay? Because the God that created us, as we talk about your brains, is the same God who went to King David after he had sinned with Bathsheba and after he had murdered Uriah and asked him to write it in the Bible. He treated him like he had never sinned. He will treat you and I the same way. That's my iPad right there. Now, something interesting happened the other day. I went to the Bay Area. I'm a superintendent for a concrete outfit in El Dorado Hills. And my job is to go all over the state of California and check on my people. And the other day, I had gone with my boss down to San Jose and up to San Francisco. And we came back. We had met in Davis. And so he dropped me off at Davis, and I got to my truck and loaded everything in my truck. And then I went to check a job in Marysville. And when I got to Marysville and got out of my truck, guess what I found? My iPad on my toolbox. And I thought, I'm very thankful that that thing didn't come off. Number one, it was an anniversary gift, and she's looking at me right now. It's engraved in the back, and I mean, it's irreplaceable, right? And I know you notice that it's fire engine red. That's because a friend of mine gave me the case for it, but it actually comes in handy because you can see it anywhere. And so, but I got to thinking about the travels of this little iPad on that toolbox. And I wondered, is that my Christian experience? I mean, am I going along at 70 miles an hour where any bump in the road might cause me to come off? Is that really, I mean, are you there? Are you so settled into the truth where you cannot be moved? Or could any bump in the road cause you? I mean, one of the bumps of the road might be this. How many ever wonder about Christian perfection? Is it so brittle and unattainable that it scares you? What does it mean? Well, today, when we talk about the brain, do you like mixing science with the Bible? You like doing that? That's what we're going to do today, and it's really fun for me to do. Today is it's a special day for me. It's my 57th birthday. Now, I wouldn't bring that up, but at the end of the presentation, you will know why I brought that up, because it's a very, very special day for me, okay, and my wife. Let's look at some science. Now, this is Dr. Nora Volkow, and she is the director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse. Now, you say, why are we talking about drug abuse today? Because she has found out that what goes on in the brain is very similar in all aspects of different types of addictions. Okay? Extremely similar. And she has research and documentation and pictures to prove it. Now let's look at what she says, and let's see if what she says is actually biblical. She's saying it, but I don't know that she is thinking biblical thoughts when she's saying it. But let's look at what she says. Dr. Volkow's work has been instrumental in demonstrating that drug addiction is a disease of the human brain. As a research psychiatrist and scientist, Dr. Volkow pioneered the use of brain imaging to investigate the toxic effects of drugs and their addictive properties. So she goes in and she does this research, and she's trying to find out specific points. Her studies have documented changes in the dopamine system. What system? The dopamine system. This is crucial, very important that you understand this. The means system affecting the actions of frontal brain regions involved in what are those three words? Motivation, drive, and pleasure. How would you like to live your life without motivation, without drive, and without pleasure? Those are the three things that make life worth living. Would you agree? So this system, would you agree, is very, very important. It's vital. So she's looking now, and she wants to find out how drugs affect this system, why we do what we do. And in her research, she's doing wonderful things because not only she gets pictures to prove it, and this is the great part of it. And she also studies the decline of brain dopamine function with age. She has also made important contributions to the neurobiology of obesity, ADHD, and the behavioral changes that occur with aging. So as she goes in and looks at drug addiction, she comes up with this whole cluster of things that are all attached to this dopamine system. Okay? Now James, in James 1:13 says, "Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man." Now here's the point, here's the key. "But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lusts and enticed." So today let's find out from science what that means. What does it mean to be drawn away by your own lust? It sounds good, we use that phrase, but what happens up here? And if we understand what happens up here, it becomes more real to us when the Bible gives us advice. We understand we ought to take that advice. Now, much of her research and advocacy is focused upon shattering current myths surrounding drug addiction, such as marijuana is not addictive, prescription medications are always safe, and you can control your addiction. These are myths, are they not? Now, she wants to debunk these myths. It is important that we do this. The cluster of myths can be investigated by focusing on how the brain creates and responds to dopamine. There's the key. Dopamine, a neurotransmitter, is a key factor in the addiction process. The way that we produce dopamine, the triggers, and the conditioned responses affect our behaviors and addictions. Now here's the key phrase. This is what got my antennas tuned in right here. Not only does dopamine relay the sensation of pleasure, but it also motivates our behavior. What's those two words? Via expectations. You ever go camping? Anybody ever go camping? Do you get excited about going camping? Is getting excited and packing and loading up and getting, is it almost better than the actual camping? Huh? No, you like to take your kitchen to the dirt. That's my boy. I don't want to go camping. I want to take my kitchen to the dirt. No, really. See, that's what motivates. So what excites us is what we get excited about. Then we go and we do the pleasurable experience. See, so dopamine not only is the pleasure of the experience, it's what motivates us to go through with the experience. You with me? So that's what makes life worth living. Where do you want to go today? I know, let's go do this. And you get excited about it, and then you go do it. So it motivates our behavior via expectations. Now, this is so important. Man is drawn away by his own lusts and entice. What excites you? What are you motivated by via expectations? Let's go on. Contrary to the previous theories of addiction, she's found that the sensitivity of the reward centers in the brains of addicts is significantly decreased. Now let's look at these brain images here. She has normal, 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 normal. And up here she has a smoker, she has an alcoholic, she has an obese person, and she has a cocaine abuser. Now, the red areas, in fact, let me get to another slide because it actually shows up better. This is a cocaine user, alcoholic, obese person. This is a normal brain. Now, what do the colors mean? Red means high dopamine, which is normal pleasure and interest. Have you ever lost interest? It's because there's no dopamine going on, you know. Now, what? Right here, see these three people, the red is the dopamine. These three people here, they're not having a good time. They are not having a good time. Now, with me, this actually happened this last summer. I began eating dessert after dinner late every night. I just started doing it. I don't know why I did it, but I started doing it. I gained 15 pounds. I got depressed. I was not having a good time. And I was wondering why. And the Lord just happened to stumble. I stumbled along this research and I found out why. Now let's go a little bit further here. This is how I stumbled along the research. She was on 60 Minutes. And whenever there's something that I notice that's about addiction or anything, I always want to check it, see what the latest research is. She uses the brain scans of addicts to show how difficult it is to just say no. Can you just say no? Can you? Why is it difficult? That's what she wants to find out. And so she's also saying, I want to find out not only about drugs, but other addictive behavior, including eating. Okay? Scans of addicts' brain help to explain the chemistry of drug addiction, which is a disease that changes the brain. We know that drug addiction is a chronic disease. Drugs change the brain, physically change it, she says. That change lasts long after the addict stops taking the drug, says Vogel. Saying, okay, drugs change the brain. Okay, but there are other things that change the brain. And that's what we're finding out. And that's the interesting part. Among her key findings is that the levels of dopamine, the chemical that regulates the pleasure centers of the brain, rise if an addict should even see a photo of the substance they abused. Does that make sense? See, you can sit a drug addict outside here, and the birds can be fluttering by, and the wind breeze can be blowing, and they won't get excited as much as if you stick a photo of the drug that they abused. Why? They are motivated via expectations. That's what excites them. And it makes total and perfect sense. Another thing is, have you ever listened to a song for the first time and said, you know, I kind of like that, but I don't know, maybe I have to hear it again, right? And then you listen to it again, and about the third or fourth time, the song begins to excite you. Why is that? Because there's certain parts coming up that you're anticipating. They did a study at McGill University, and the same stuff goes on when people listen to their favorite songs. You're motivated via expectations. Oh, I can't wait for this part to come up, and that's why I like this song. And this happens in almost every aspect of our lives. We are motivated via expectations. What we like excites us, and that's what we go and experience. She demonstrates the same is true if a hungry person sees food, showing, say, for a brain scan of a hungry person being shown a picture of a hamburger. See all that red? The scan reveals a dopamine rush. It just basically stimulates the release of dopamine, and the more they release, the more they want the food. The more it releases, the more it wants the food. And I said, my, we are surrounded by stimuli with which we are conditioned. If you like hamburgers, you may see that McDonald's yellow arches, and then the dopamine goes inside your brain. You want a hamburger. You don't know why you want it. All you know is you want it. It's a chemical reaction. And it's happening to you all the time, motivating you by what you like. Is that making sense? Now we're getting warmer. This may explain why there are so many obese people who cannot say no to food, says Vogel. If it were so easy just to say no, I think we would have no problem with obesity. We would have no problem with drugs. She points her own difficulties in resisting the things that she likes, such as chocolate and coffee, that she sometimes can't resist. I'm a very wired person, so I shouldn't drink more coffee, but at some times I can't resist it, she says. So saying to someone, just say no is, Magical thinking. Is it really? Is it really? I think she's left out a spiritual component. What do you think? But she has some interesting facts, doesn't she? Now, as we talk about thinking, because you're thinking, okay, I don't do drugs. I'm not obese, so I'm off the hook. Really? Let's look at some more research. What you are thinking right now can actually change the chemical composition of your brain cells and the rest of your central nervous system. If you are thinking angry thoughts, you are teaching your brain to become an angry brain. If you are thinking jealous thoughts, you are teaching your brain to become a jealous brain. And it goes on and on. And this is what we are finding. And it's this system, this dopamine system, that the devil is attacking with the temptations. He knows what excites you. And he knows you will be drawn away by your own lusts. Why? Because those are the behaviors that we already engage in. Let me explain. Our brains form a million new connections every second of our lives. It's in these changing connections that memories are stored, personalities are shaped, and what's that word? Habits are learned. Very important. Habits are chemical reactions that go on the brain. The scientific explanation is an action potential comes down, the neurotransmitter comes out of the vesicles, permeates the membranes, goes into the synaptic cleft, and for a lack of a better word, rests on a receptor, and this goes on a million times per second in your brain. Okay? A better way to explain it, though, and as far as habits go, because as they continue to fire in the same place, that's a habit. But a better way for me, I'm a simple guy. So I like to explain things simply, what makes sense to me. If you ever cut across the lawn on a shortcut when you were a kid, I know when I went to school, that's what I did. I grew up in Lincoln, and I cut across the lawn to go to school every day. And it wore a path. In fact, it wore a rut. When I was about this tall, I don't know, maybe 7 years old or so, I used to go out and help my grandfather change sprinkler pipe. He had a dairy just outside of Lincoln, and he had an old, I don't know, I think it was about a 55 GMC pickup. And it had a compound gear, which is called, what do we used to call that compound gear? Granny gear. And you could put that truck in granny gear. And this is what he used to do. He used to put me behind the wheel like this. That's not me, of course. But he used to put me behind the wheel. And then he would put the truck in granny gear. And he would put me in the field, in the ruts in the field. Okay? Where that truck had driven year after year. And then I would go along with that truck, going along about a little slower than a walking speed. That granny gears goes right about this. And Grandpa would load the pipe onto the truck. Now, who's driving the truck? Huh? The ruts are driving the truck. Who thinks they're driving the truck? I do. Now, the question is, could I ever steer that truck out of those ruts? No. Grandpa knew this, and that's the way it is up here. We continue in the same behavior, we create the ruts, and we think we're driving, but we're not. The ruts are driving us. The ruts are driving us. Is walking a habit? Yeah. Remember, I don't know if you remember, I don't remember, but when you were a little child, your brain had to learn how to fire to put one foot in front of the other. And it was a great big day when you took your first steps, when the brain fired right, right? And so this happens so that I don't have to think while I'm up here, Rich, put your left foot forward, put your right foot forward, put your left foot, as I'm trying to talk. And my hand gestures are also habits. All this is so our brain can free itself up for thinking. It's a wonderful system, isn't it? It's great. Now, what about your daily shower routine? Do you think about what you do when you go do your shower routine? Or do you have a routine that's automatic? See, even routines are habits. I know I'm a counter. I don't know if anybody's a counter, but I count everything I do. So if I come out of the shower and I didn't do four things, so maybe I forgot something. And I go back in and I stare, you know. Anybody, are you a counter? Anybody else count? Because I count everything I do. Nobody's counter, huh? I've only met one. Are you a counter? Yes, I've met two counters in my life. All right, we have more counters out there. All right. Yeah, I can't. I don't know why, but what about your reaction towards waiting in a line? Can that be a habit? How many of you like waiting in a line? Not, yeah. How many of you will allow that to ruin your whole day, though? See, I'm getting the victory. My wife will attest to that. When we first started going out, we would go to a restaurant. I'd say, you know, if there's a lot of people, we're not eating there. And then we'd come around the corner and there'd be a line out the door. No, not only would we not eat there, we would not eat out at all. It was terrible. I would allow it to ruin my whole day. And that was a habit. Terrible habit, you know? What about this kind of line? You like waiting in those kind of lines? Is there anything you can do about waiting in that line? There's nothing you can do, right? So as we sit here in the calmness of this place, it's pretty senseless to be beating on the dash, being in a hurry, because there's nothing you can do anyway, right? But when you're in that situation, if you have that habit, it can control you. Why? Because that's what you've always done. What is an addiction? Addiction is a habit that controls you. You don't control it. Very simply put, a habit that controls you, you don't control it. Now, addictions are divided into two classes. Number one is substance addictions, and number two is behavioral addictions. So let's talk about some addictive substances, because we want to do a little background as we continue to go through this, because it's very important that we understand some similarities between these two. All substance addictions are behavioral addictions. But not all behavioral addictions are substance addictions. Are you with me? Okay, so it's important we understand this. Now, what are the addictive substances that were very common? Alcohol, tobacco, isn't that a beautiful picture? Imitation carob, right? Sugar, drugs, coffee, okay, soda, addictive substances. Now, what about behavior? This is where it can get fun. Overeating, overexercise. What about television? Can be addiction? Yeah. Anger, jealousy, gossip, overachieving, music, sexual addictions, gambling. There are so many, and you can probably think of some more, behavioral addictions, places that we go to rather than going to God. Things that control us, we don't control them. That's the definition of an addiction. But I thought we had freedom of choice. We'll talk about that. Who has the choice? Who makes the choice? See, when you're addicted to something or some behavior, the choices you are making are not your choices. Do you realize that? The choices you're making are your choices your habit is making for you. I know when I was addicted to alcohol, I would go up to the liquor store at 5:30 in the morning and wait for that liquor store to open at 6 so I could get that little bottle. That little bottle told me to go up and get it. I had given myself over to the little bottle. In a situation where you get angry uncontrollably, the situation is telling you when to get angry. You've given yourself over to that. Let's see what that means. Even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over. See, the devil does not take what he wants. We have to give ourselves over to him. That's a myth. that the devil takes whatever he wants. We have freedom to choose. But once we give ourselves over to him, Katie bar the door. And going after strange flesh are set forth for an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. You will find that in Jude. You will find that in Ephesians. You will find that in the spirit of prophecy, that we give ourselves over. Here's the battle. You know, Paul describes it as two people in Romans. It's one person. But do you ever feel like there's two people inside? Sometimes that's how it feels, isn't it? Well, here's the battle. Your mind is governed by the will, is it not? We can give our will to Christ and allow him to work, right? Or we can give our will to another, right? What influences that? Thoughts and feelings influence that will, okay? But like Paul says, we have two natures, don't we? We have a spiritual nature, and that's where we reason, that's where our conscience is, and that's where our center of worship is. Okay? That's our spiritual nature. That tells us right from wrong. Okay? But we also have genetic vulnerabilities. You know what genetic vulnerabilities are? Selfishness. We are selfish. We want what we want, and we want it now because not only does it feel good, it seems good, and we convince ourselves because we have a tug towards selfishness. Now, lust of the eyes, I lost my M there, look at that. Lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, pride of life. Materialism, sensualism, egoism. Now, here's the battle. You have the spiritual nature, and you have the genetic vulnerabilities. The so-called executive functions of the frontal lobe involve the ability to recognize, what's that? Future consequences resulting from current actions, to choose between good and bad actions, or better and best, override and suppress unacceptable social responses. What does that mean? In other words, constantly going on in your brain right now and throughout the day, you are going to judge, what am I going to do in a given situation? Weighing future consequences from your current actions. Okay? And that goes on constantly. If I'm going to pull out, that car is about 500 feet away. What are the future consequences if I kind of pull out slow and he hits me? So I'm going to wait. Okay? What happens if I get in a little spat with my beautiful wife here and I want to be right so bad that I raise my voice and I say, but something tells me, there's future consequences from those current actions. Watch what you say, even though you think you're right. Who's always right, gentlemen, in an argument with your wife? Don't ever forget that. A happy wife is a happy life, right? Yeah. Okay. So, here we go. Let's talk about maybe something that's common to all. Does everybody here eat? Okay, we all eat. Okay, that's good. That's important. So we can all relate to this, right? How many of you like broccoli? All right. I got a lot of hands, all right? How many of you like that? Now, did you notice the giggles and all that? I didn't hear any giggles with the broccoli, did you? Why not? Are there future consequences to this? What are they? They are very good, right? Is there a lot of excitability about the current actions of this? No, not really. I mean, you know. But what about this? Are there future... It has fruit. And it has imitation carob. You see how we can reason these things through? Are there future consequences to this? But what about the current actions? Is that it may be desirable. Why? Why would it be desirable? Oh, there's that word again. Like drugs, sugar stimulates the release of dopamine, a feel-good neurotransmitter, among other functions. However, eating protein, or other foods doesn't cause a big rush of happy chemicals. Eating that broccoli is not going to give you a rush of happy chemicals. Okay? However, sugar is somewhat unique. Now, this is from Breaking the Food to Seduction by Dr. Neil Barnard. This is incredible. Because tell me if you haven't had this experience. The sugar triggers the release of natural opiates in the brain. It also has a marked appetite-driving effect. Once it touches your lips, sugar's opiates break through the dam, holding back your appetite. An army of dietitians couldn't save you from the binge. The opiates are busy resetting all your internal priorities. So let's put this into an experience, okay? It's Sabbath, and you have this wonderful, and I can think of a person's home that I go to, and she does this all the time. I won't mention her name, though. You sit down, and you have this Sabbath lunch, and there's like, 15 courses, and it's all great, and you're sizing it up. Well, can I eat a little bit of that? But no, not too much of that, because I want some of that. And the next thing you know, you finally get through all those courses, and you maybe have a little olive at the end to kind of, close it down savory, And so then, after all that's done and you're stuffed and you're kicked back, glazed, and you're glazed over. I mean, it's over, right? And then she comes around the corner with a tray of what? Dessert. Once again, that imitation carob cake. She's got that right there. And so what do you say? What did your reason just tell you? That you were full, right? You needed no more. But what happened? You saw some sugar. I have another name for it, but I won't use it here. And so you saw some sugar, or whatever you saw. And you said, well, you know what? I'm really full. I really shouldn't. And of course, then the temptation, I'll just have a little sliver, right? Just a little sliver. I don't want to upset the host, right? And so you have a little sliver. But what happens after you just take that little sliver? You could eat the whole cake, couldn't you? Something happens. It changes you. And that's what happens with sugar. And that's why it is so hard for us to deny that sugar. An army of dietitians couldn't save you from the binge. Okay, so let's break it down with an animation here. This is what happens in your brain. Okay, this is a dopamine cell, this is a pleasure cell, and these are the receptors, and here's the signal coming down the axon, and here's the dopamine, and here's what your brain tells you. Your brain says, beautiful, this is perfect, I'm done, whatever. Okay, that's enough for now. So this is what it means to be free when you make this decision. The brain says, stop, I've eaten enough food, I've exercised enough for the day, no thank you, I don't need any more of that. And it's made a decision based on logic and reason. And when we make decisions based on logic and reason, we are free. This is called living according to the Spirit. Okay? Now, let's look at this nature now, and let's see what happens when reason is overridden. Because this happens in our lives quite often. Our desires override reason. And that's where we get into an addiction problem. This is bondage. In other words, we do this excitable event. It says release more dopamine. This cell says, that was intense. Do it again. I really like what's happening right now. I like this sugar. I want more. Or I like this other behavior. And that's how we get excited. And the more excited we get, the more dopamine flows, and we are getting pleasure from it. The only problem is the brain is demanding a certain behavior to make the body temporarily feel good, regardless of the long-term damage it will do. That is called living according to the flesh. That is bondage. Your body is controlling you. The substances are controlling you. You have given yourself over to the behavior or the substance. That is addiction. Okay? Now, we actually educate our minds. We actually educate our taste buds. We actually educate our brains with what we do. We start liking the brain stimulation of the pleasure so much that we choose it more and more until one makes a conscious decision to accept pleasure over right and wrong. Don't get me wrong. Is there anything wrong with pleasure? But when pleasure conflicts with right and wrong, is there something wrong with it? Yes, and that's what we're talking about today. Now, what do? We're stuck, right? We got these ruts. Our brain's driving us. We think we're driving. Now we don't even know. We get all confused, right? So what happens? Are we sunk? Now, to change the habits, to change the reaction of the brain, one must make new choices. But can we just muster up ego motivation to do that? No, we can't. We must now give ourselves over to something or someone else. We can give ourselves over. There only been one on the throne, right? There can only be one. But how can we do this, though? Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he's a new creation. Old things have passed away. Now, this is so important. Behold, all things have become new. Now, wait a minute. I was addicted to drugs for 25 years. 25 years. And when I got clean and sober, all things weren't new. But check it out. I got clean and sober, and about a year after I had got clean and sober, the Lord tapped me on the shoulder and he says, "Rich, I really appreciate you witnessing for me and everything, but you got an ashtray for a mouth. You need to stop smoking." So about a year after I quit doing drugs, I quit smoking. About a year went along. "Rich, I really love you witnessing for me, but there's garbage coming out of your mouth. I couldn't quit swearing, you know, the ruts." "Okay, Lord." And each time that I went through one of these phases, the Lord cleaned me up. Okay? How do all things become new? It's our line of vision. We see things differently. And when you see things differently, you can identify right from wrong. And the Lord gives you a desire to do right. And if we walk in the light that He's given us, He will give us more light. And the more light we embrace, the more light He will give us. And that changes the brain. It changes what we like. It changes what we get excited about. When I used to get excited about drugs and rock and roll, I get excited about witnessing for Jesus now. I get excited about stories like how David also tapped Solomon on the shoulder and said, "You know, I know you messed your whole life up also, but why don't you write another book in the Bible? Tell us about it. Tell everybody about it." "Well, I thought only holy men of old wrote in the Bible." "Yes, I'm going to treat you as a holy man of old, even though you totally wasted your whole life." What kind of God do we serve? I mean, in human logic, that's insane. To wipe the slate that clean to where someone can write another book in the Bible. Will God do that for you? Yes, all things have become new, even your reputation. Crowd out the bad behavior with good behavior. You can't stamp out sin, but you can exchange it for good. You can exchange that bad. You can crowd it out. A gambler cannot sit in front of the casino saying to himself, "I'm not going to gamble. I'm not going to gamble. I'm not going to gamble." No, he has to go do something else. He has to crowd that behavior out. Among her key findings is that the levels of dopamine, the chemical that regulates the pleasure centers of the brain, what did it say? Rise if an addict should even see a photo of the substance they abused. What has to change? The photo album. We need to change the photos. Fill your minds with those things that are good and that deserve praise. Things that are true, noble, right, pure, lovely, and honorable. Let me ask you a question. Who is the only person that fits that description? Jesus. Fill your mind with Christ. Change the photos. Change the template. Move out of those ruts. We don't have the power. It only takes 10 millivolts of electricity to move that out of that rut. We don't have it. Christ has to do that. We have the choice to choose to dwell on Him, and that will automatically get us out of the ruts. We get excited about Him rather than old behavior. Now, here's the key. Here is the key. That all sounds good, but the next verse, the next text is the most important, and I'll explain why. Put into practice what you learned and received from me, both from my words and from my actions, and the God of peace who gives us peace, and the God who gives us peace will be with you. What does it say? Put it into practice. Why is that so important? I'll explain. In my job, as the summertime comes and we ramp up for summer work, because we pour concrete, you pour a lot of concrete in the summer, I have to hire people. And part of the hiring is we sit them down at the table and we go through many different things. And one of the things we go through is safety. And part of that safety program is heat illness. And this is right in our wheelhouse, because part of heat illness is we want to determine how much water we should drink, and it's only water, and we instruct. When you're out there, you tell your people only to drink water. It should be at a certain temperature, and every one of your people need to know that they need to drink 1 quart of water per hour. Okay? Perfect. That's the Adventist message. I can do that. So one week I hired 10 guys. Okay? 10 guys, and I went through this safety program 10 times that week, asking them, what do you do if a guy goes down? You dial 911 first, and you send somebody out to the road to meet the ambulance, then you get him over in the shade, and you do all these wonderful things to help the person. We go through that. How much water are you supposed to drink? 1 quart per hour. Perfect. What else are you supposed to know? I need to know where my shade is at all times. Okay, where's your shade? Okay, it's over there. Because someone will walk up and ask you from OSHA, hopefully not, we'll walk up and ask everyone on the job, how much water are you supposed to drink? 1 quart per hour. Okay? So this was driven into my brain by Friday, right? But something interesting happened. Friday afternoon, I got real dizzy. Vertigo. You ever had it? Anybody? There's many causes for it. I found out what the cause. But in my research, this is what I came across. This is by Dr. Paul Kramer. Yes, dizziness and vertigo can be caused by what? Dehydration. Your brain is made mostly of water. Your body is made mostly of water, for that matter. When you don't get enough water, it can alter brain and nerve function, and a sign of this happening is dizziness. What had happened to me? I looked back and reflected on that week. I had drank no water. I was dehydrated completely. In the process of instructing all these people how to stay hydrated, I had not put it into practice. If we don't put into practice biblical principles, it will not change the ruts in the brain. Okay? How do you know if you're dehydrated? Now, this is the interesting part. This is way more interesting. How do you know if you're dehydrated? Well, if you drink less than 64 ounces of water a day, you're dehydrated. 64 ounces of water is 1/2 gallon. That's water, not juice, not soda, not coffee, milk, tea, soup, water. Many people say to me, well, I don't feel thirsty. How can I be dehydrated? On Friday afternoon, I did not feel thirsty. How could I be dehydrated? Here's the interesting point. It's like this. When you have been dehydrated for a long time, your thirst mechanism shuts down. Okay? What does that mean? You don't feel thirsty until your mouth is actually dry. But it's strange. If you start drinking water regularly, your thirst mechanism comes back. If you get back into the Bible, your thirst mechanism will come back. But if you stay away, you will not thirst for the word. It's science. We like what we do, and then we do what we like. If you've been away from the Bible, get back into the Bible so your thirst mechanism for the Bible comes back. And then you will not be able to stay away from the Bible. Does it make sense? In conclusion, Fill your minds with those things that are good, that deserve praise, things that are true, noble, right, pure, lovely, and honorable. Change those pictures in the brain. Put into practice what you've learned. And then the God who gives us peace will be with you. So, everybody's different. Every one of you might right now be thinking, what is triggering my dopamine? Some of you might be pretty good shape. Some of you might be discouraged because you know there's a lot of things that you like that are not too red hot. Things that you got to change. And then you say, well, I just don't know. Let me tell you a story. I have been clean and sober for 16 years today. Today is my 16th year clean and sober on my birthday. That's why I mentioned my birthday before. Because my birthday, my clean date is on my birthday. I can remember lying face down on my bed screaming at the top of my lungs for God to help me. 16 years ago today. And he lifted the obsession to use drugs. If he can do that for me, he can do anything for you. I was tore up from the floor up, as they say. It didn't all happen at once, but God told me one thing, and don't forget this. It is simple, but it's not easy. Okay? It is. It is so simple. That science and the Bible say the same thing. We do what we like, and we like what we do, and man is drawn away by his own lusts and enticed, because that's what he does. If you change the pictures in the brain, if you leave it all to God and say, God, you can do for me what I cannot do for myself because you say so. Sixteen years ago today, if I would have used drugs one more day, I would have died. You know how you get impressions? And I knew. Why did I quit? I had no other option. I was going to die. None of us want to die. But everything is as important as that day when I cried out to God, God, help me. Three-word prayer for 3 months. God, help me. That's how simple it is. Three-word prayer for 3 months. So my hopes is to you today, you've put science and the Bible together, maybe made a little more sense about what's going on in your head, and we've also talked about a God that would love nothing more than ask you to write it down for the rest of the universe, how he saved you. Because that's going to happen. We will go places and tell people and other beings and be asked the same thing that God asked Solomon. Tell others. I know you've messed your life up. Doesn't matter to me. I will treat you like I treated my son. Is that your desire? To have God treat you like he treated his son and have you changed? Perfection is not something that is brittle and unattainable. It just means to mature. That's all it means. Is an apple, when it's small and green, is a red apple, when it's small and green, on the tree, is it still perfect at that stage? Yes. It's perfect at every stage of growth. As long as we are growing in Christ, we are perfect in his eyes. Let's turn in our hymnals to hymn number, I hope I got it right, 111, It Took a Miracle. Hymn number 111, It Took a Miracle. I think Albert Einstein once put it this way. Some people live their lives as if nothing is a miracle, and others live their lives as if everything is a miracle.